You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It's 7:06. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north on a Wednesday morning, September 24th, 2025. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot standing by as well. Coming up, we will have the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underly, joining us for our weekly homeroom segment. She recently gave her annual State of Education address at the state capitol, and will be talking to us more about that in our next half hour. And we have Brittany's forecast coming as well. But as you know, this week we've brought back one of our Text to Win contests. It is time for today's first round of the Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. Yes, green and gold. You'll get cash and jewelry for the prize of the day. Of course, you need the Civic Media app. Look up a station, use the text button. For the 7 a.m. hour here, once I give you the word, you will have until 8 a.m. to text it. There will be seven chances throughout the day, each with different keywords. So seven chances to enter each day. Of all of the day's entries in this multi-state, multi-station game, one lucky winner is going to get $200 cash and a gold-plated chain. And then one really lucky winner for the whole enchilada will get the grand prize, two club-level indoor seats to see Green Bay versus Minnesota play some football. It's a Green Bay home game on November 23rd. There's a gas card to get you to the game as well. Total value of the grand prize package is more than $1,500. Now, the first time you enter, you are likely going to get a return message giving you a way to earn another entry linked to a specific activity like signing up for a newsletter. Winners will be contacted by Civic Media within 5 business days, first by text message. Full contest rules at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. All right, if you got all that, then I can give you the new keyword for this hour until 8 o'clock. The word is morning, like morning of the day, M-O-R-N-I-N-G, morning, M-O-R-N-I-N-G. You get till 8 o'clock to text that. And then you've got another chance in the 9 a.m. hour with Jane and Greg for Matt and Air on Air. And then throughout the day for the Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. Again, the keyword is morning. All right, Brittany's here now, and we have another foggy morning here on Lake Wissota. The advisory is where? Just basically the northwestern portion of Wisconsin, right, Brittany?
Yeah, it pretty much goes from Winona, Eau Claire, all the way up towards Hurley, and then everything north and west of that line, you're in the dense fog advisory, but there's still fog creeping into places northeast as well. So Minocqua, Eagle River, you're still seeing that. But it is pretty thick, especially north and west, huh, Pat?
Yeah,
see far.
It is. I mean, I can't take the pontoon out right now. I just couldn't see where I'd end up on the golf course across the way. So
that would be eerie.
Yeah, we need a little sunshine or something. What you got in store for us?
I got a little bit as we go later on throughout the day. More and more will peak out further south in the state, though. You're going to have to wait maybe until tomorrow to see more sunshine. You do have a chance for some spotty sprinkles on occasion. But no heavy rain or anything like that. It would just be a sprinkle here or there. So less clouds later in the day. We're looking at breezy winds out of the north today. A beach hazard statement, too, from Milwaukee through Racine and Kenosha. Those waves are building up about 3 to 6 feet out there. So not a good beach day. And temperatures right now, about 55 or so to 60 degrees for a majority of us. It is mostly cloudy, and we will make it today to the mid-60s to about 70 degrees. So slightly cooler today than the past few days. Then we start our warm-up tomorrow. Slow at first, but it really bumps up as we go into the weekend and next week. So tomorrow, a few mid to upper 70s scattered throughout the state. Friday, all of us hitting the upper 70s and then nearing 80 by Saturday. And then places south will be hitting 80 all throughout the weekend and into next week. A lot of places north flirting with that as well. And it's going to be dry and sunny, and you won't even need me for a little while because it's just going to be gorgeous. Mwah! Out there.
we'll need you. We'll take it. Yeah, just to remind you, keep reminding us how beautiful it is. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton, cloudy and 54. I have mowing jobs in Wittenberg today. One of the places where I mow in Wittenberg, Rachel's Roadside Bar and Grill, made it on YouTube's Best American Restaurants. I couldn't make it to the broadcast because I had to work. I mowed two huge yards in the rural areas of Tigerton with no cell coverage. Yesterday, it was a very beautiful day till the clouds came out in the late afternoon. No fog right now in Tigerton, just cloudy. But Brittany always brings sunshine anyway, regardless.
Oh, thanks, Rob.
And Tony, of course, being up in Ashland, talking about the green and gold contest. Forget the tickets to the football game. It's the gas card. He's like, you're going to pay for my gas too? That's like getting another ticket.
True.
which is true with what they're charging for gas to get from Ashland to Green Bay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know if Tony can win, but all of his neighbors in the Ashland area, they could.
That's funny.
I want gas. I'll go. I don't even have to watch the game. You're giving me a gas card.
Somebody else can have the tickets.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, Tony then can give them away in his own way. But anyway, Brittany, thank you so much for the update. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We'll talk to you next hour. All right. Hey, remember, sign up for our newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. At that point, you can see Ellie talking all about music. Turns out Ellie's a fan of some of the older music here, and some of us appreciate that very much. In fact, I like it so much, I think that starting next week in this time slot, we're going to bring Ellie on to talk more in person about what's in the newsletter. I think we've given her enough of a grace period, and we now need to subject her to this radio show. And so look for that starting next week. But she's busy working on not just, you know, getting used to the new digs and everything, but she's working on a special fall edition of the newsletter that'll come out this Friday. It's all about fall festivals and Oktoberfests, and get ready for some spooky sights as we get closer to Halloween. So, I mean, if you're looking for ideas for weekend road trips or things right in your community, go get signed up for the newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up in the banner at the top of the homepage. And while you're doing that, sign up for Civic Media's new daily newsletter. For that, you got to take your browser over to Substack, specifically civicmediatoday.substack.com, and get the best of all the shows. Of course, you could also take the shows with you. And to do that, well, go over to Spotify while you're doing all the surfing. Just get it all done. Get over to Spotify, follow this show and all of your other favorite Civic Media shows. And that way you're never going to miss anything from what we do throughout the course of the day here on Civic Media and at Up North News. Speaking of Up North News and over on our Facebook page, we were looking at, you know, some of the posts and, you know, monitoring some of the comments, because every so often you get a troll in the comment section. And we got somebody in the comment section. I don't know that he would consider himself a troll, but he does a lot of trolling out there. That'd be Derek Van Orden. That's right. The congressman jumped into our comment section about a story that we did late last week about all of the threats that he's making to people's employment and threats to cut federal funding to like entire cities, like Eau Claire, like the entire Mayo Clinic system, because he doesn't like what some people said about the Charlie Kirk murder. And he wants to equate it to domestic terrorism. And I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. And so when we noted in our article, you know, the ways that what Derek Van Orden is doing runs counter to the First Amendment, he got in our comment section and he said the following: not all speech is protected speech. 18 U.S. Code subsection 2331. Look it up. We will not be sending money to organizations or municipalities that keep people on their payroll who advocate for domestic terrorism. For people who advocate for domestic terrorism. That's what he thinks when people put up posts that indicate that they were not fans of Charlie Kirk. So as for that citation that he made, we just put up a post. You can find it on our social media sites where we basically correct the record. We note that in the U.S. Code, chapter 18, section 2331, paragraph 5, does indeed outline domestic terrorism. It covers activities that are dangerous to human life, or try to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, or influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion. We read it. We read it again. Did not see anything in there about social media posts that make a congressman angry as somehow defining domestic terrorism. In fact, that law that Van Orden cites does not designate domestic terrorism as a crime. It defines domestic terrorism so that people can be charged with other crimes like murder and hate crimes and weapons violations. But by Derek Van Orden's logic, countless free speech posts seem to him to, quote, advocate for domestic terrorism and could be punished by the government. And so we ask people to get in the comment section and tell us, do you agree with him that when people were criticizing Charlie Kirk or simply echoing his words back, is that not protected speech? Because Derek Van Orden said, not all speech is protected speech. And he's right about that part of it. There is hate speech. There's the, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater type of speech as well. But posting on social media that he didn't like Charlie Kirk, and it leads to, I mean, perhaps 1,000 posts by now from Derek Van Orden. In fact, the Washington Post took note of it. They have a new article this morning, co-written in part by Patrick Marley, who was at the Journal Sentinel for a long time. And the Washington Post article focuses on a teacher in Ellsworth, Krista Lysecki, who was looking at the coverage about Charlie Kirk and grew exasperated because not enough was being made of the horribly racist and hateful things that he said. She tapped out a Facebook post about it, and it was where we actually first saw Derek Van Orden threatening to cut all funding to the city of Ellsworth unless this teacher was fired. Well, she has been suspended with pay, and she's waiting to find out if she will be fired or otherwise disciplined. And she told the Washington Post, people are upset that people wanted to silence Charlie Kirk, but they're not upset that I'm being silenced. I may not be proud of what I said, but it was my right to say it. And that is really what it comes down to. And it's the point Jimmy Kimmel was making yesterday as well when he came back on air, was that the First Amendment works best, works to its utmost when it protects speech that you don't like, that you don't agree with. That doesn't make it domestic terrorism. That doesn't even make it hate speech. It's simply something that you didn't like. Might make you outraged, but as long as you don't instigate violence or government threats as a result of it, then the First Amendment is doing what it's supposed to do. So Derek Van Orden can get as snooty as he wants with reporters, as he has. He can get his confrontational and comment sections. He can use all the cuss words that he wants, and he does. And he can cite a specific chapter, section, and paragraph of the U.S. Code about domestic terrorism. But he said, read it. Well, we did. It doesn't cover social media posts that make a congressman get his fee-fees all hurt. Still to come, we'll be talking to the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
We've got afternoon baseball on some of the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network. Now, not when you're normally used to it, like, you know, like a 1 o'clock game or something like that, because the Brewers are on the West Coast. They're playing San Diego. So the game isn't until the 3 o'clock hour. Pre-game begins at 2:35 on several civic media stations. Head over to the website to learn much more. Let's see. I also wanted to note from a Courier newsroom standpoint that Mark Jacob has a new Stop the Presses newsletter out. It's his weekly newsletter about right-wing extremism, exploiting the weaknesses in American journalism. And this week's issue is called Can Comedy Help Conquer Fascism? Loudly mocking Trump now may help us avoid whisper jokes later on. So again, that's from Mark Jacob. Head over to stopthepresses.news or couriernewsroom.com to learn more. Now, I mentioned that at 8:35, we're going to be talking to a healthcare policy expert about tax credits for Affordable Care Act plans. And so we'll get into the details of the tax credits coming up and why Congress is looking at a potential government shutdown about it. But I wanted to kind of set this up by giving some background and do it by way of one of my favorite activities, which is taking issue with something that the New York Times is framing. Here's the headline from the New York Times. Why Obamacare bills may double next year. Why Obamacare bills may double next year. When you hear that, whose fault do you think it is? Well, first off, they don't tell you, but there's only one name mentioned in there. So apparently there must be something wrong with Obamacare, right? It's something about Obama and the Democrats, right? No. And why ask a question? Why say, why Obamacare bills may double next year? When you know the answer. When a more correct headline would have been, Republicans set it up for Obamacare bills to double next year, or for health insurance bills to double next year. Anyway, terrible framing, but they do get to the point later in the article. They note that under the Affordable Care Act, which covers, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in Wisconsin and millions throughout the country, the vast majority of people enrolled under the Affordable Care Act, the ACA or Obamacare, get additional federal tax credits to make those health insurance policies more affordable. They were expanded by President Biden and a Democratic Congress in 2021. They are set to expire at the end of this year, and Republicans are refusing to renew that, which is their right. But again, give a little listen later for when they want Democratic votes for something. Because Democratic leaders are demanding an extension of the assistance in healthcare costs in exchange for their support for a government spending bill that must pass by the middle of next week to avoid a government shutdown. Here's another thing the New York Times says. Republican leaders have cited the high cost of the subsidies, estimated at about $350 billion over 10 years, and potential fraud in enrollments for the program. Again, why are you just buying into the Republican talking point of saying potential fraud in enrollments? Do you have any proof of this after a decade? If not, then maybe the better framing would have been Republican leaders have made baseless claims about fraud for the enrollment. And in terms of the cost, yeah, $350 billion over 10 years is a lot. Now, compared to the cost of having tens of millions of more Americans without health insurance coverage. But back to the article. It says, many individual Republican lawmakers have expressed a willingness to extend the funding in some form, acknowledging that if it goes away, it's going to hurt their constituents before the midterm elections. And if a deal is not struck, more than 20 million Americans will face higher insurance premiums next year. Americans' share of premiums could increase by an average of more than 75%, and about 2 million people are expected to lose their coverage next year if the extra funding expires, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Other recent Trump administration actions could erode signups among younger, healthier people. Health officials recently embraced less comprehensive forms of insurance that were not as expensive. They've also initiated rules that make it more complicated to enroll in Obamacare plans and harder to renew at the end of the year. Now, Republicans are also hiding behind this point. They're saying that these expanded tax credits are helping wealthier Americans who don't need the assistance. Some House Republicans described the effort to make the expanded credits permanent as, quote, massive taxpayer-funded handouts to the wealthy and large health insurance companies. That's really something. It's nice to know that there's one time that they can say, oh, let's not help the wealthy with something. That's a very convenient talking point when you're making healthcare more expensive or gutting healthcare for millions of the non-wealthy, shall we say. Obamacare has become a critical insurance option for those who do not have access to health insurance at work. About half the people now enrolled either work for small businesses that don't offer health insurance coverage, or they are self-employed. That's according to KFF, a nonpartisan health research group that we used to call the Kaiser Family Foundation. So here's the short version. Republicans want to take away your affordable health insurance and make you pay more to their buddies whose profits and wallets get fatter if you have to pay whatever it is they demand for premiums. And they want to give them more power to go back to rejecting you for necessary coverage. Even if you've been paying your premiums for years, they will find ways to say, nope, that's not covered. The Affordable Care Act made that tougher on insurance companies to do, to treat their customers that way. And it helped make health insurance more affordable. And President Biden and the Democratic Congress made things a little bit more affordable. Again, it costs money, but a lot less than having tens of millions of Americans go without health insurance coverage. Republicans want that to go away, but they can't pass a budget without some Democratic votes. Democrats are saying, fine, put back some of these health care cuts. Republicans are saying no. They're hoping that enough Americans are hurt by a government shutdown next week that Democrats will cave. Democrats should not cave. Our homeroom segment is next. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. A reminder that our Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest is going on this hour. And the key word for this hour is morning, M-O-R-N-I-N-G, like the morning part of the day. Text morning using the Civic Media app before 8 a.m. and you will be in the running for a daily prize, which is $200 and a gold-plated chain, see green and gold. And also in the running, every entry is in the running for the grand prize, which includes tickets to a Green Bay versus Minnesota game in Green Bay, playing a little football in the month of November, and a gas card to get you there. Again, details at the Civic Media website, Civic Media. But morning is the keyword to text before 8 o'clock. And then your next chance to win, and there are seven chances every day, your next chance to win 9 a.m. hour on Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Time for our weekly homeroom segment where we talk about public education, Wisconsin, opportunities and threats. And the threats are out there, but there are people who are willing to lead and call them out. And one of those folks is the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley, who joins us this morning in the wake of her annual State of Education address delivered last week. Well, Jill Underley, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning to you too, Pat. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. It's so nice to have you here today. I mean, you've seen the headlines in the coverage of your remarks, and so we're going to start there. I mean, there are definitely issues that are internal to education in Wisconsin, but there's some real external pressure, and it's reflected in headlines that had you taking note that the biggest schoolyard bully that Wisconsin schools face right now is our own federal government, is the Trump administration. It's a, you know, it's a very assertive thing to say. Tell folks why that was a central part of your remarks.
Yeah, well, so the overall message from the State of Education address is that Wisconsin public education is a living story. It's written daily by students, educators, and communities. The themes in the State of Education were about belonging, love, community, pride in our communities. And what we're seeing right now is that the federal government is really trying to destroy that, right? They're taking away funding for teachers they're taking away funding for special education students. The one that was in the headlines was students who are deafblind. They have threatened funding for school nutrition, programs in our schools. And so it's just really, they are the ones that are really causing a lot of chaos, I think, and uncertainty in our schools. Schools are wondering, are they going to get this money? And at the Department of Public Instruction, we're left to navigate that and stand up, you know, for our school districts, which is what we'll do anyway. But the federal government is really inserting themselves into the everyday operations of our schools and really threatening the good work that our schools are doing.
Especially for a group that says that all the time that they're looking to give education back to the states, they seem to find ways to continue to micromanage or to interfere. And you touched on one of them that really got my attention yesterday, as Up North News reporter Selena Heller was working on this story about how under Trump, the U.S. Department of Education is canceling funding that would go toward the Wisconsin Deafblind Technical Assistance Program. And why is it being endangered like this? Because it falls under Donald Trump's definition of DEI, that you're singling out a group for help. In this case, children who are deaf and blind. Talk more about the program and its value, as well as the assertion that there's something divisive apparently about this.
Well, that's just it. It's just so arbitrary. I think, you know, when they were going through these programs, they're just doing a find and search, you know, in the grants for anything that mentioned diversity or inclusion or equity. And the deafblind community, I mean, it's a very specific population, very vulnerable population, very specialized when it comes to instruction. And when you look at special needs, or you look at the deafblind community, you know, as an example, I mean, what we do in public education is we try to ensure that every human has an opportunity to be included and belong in their communities. And so we provide specialized training. We provide, you know, this grant money provides specialized instruction, but also training for the teachers, materials, I mean, Braille. So it's really just disheartening, and rather it's just cruel, to be honest, that they're doing this to our communities. I mean, they're just ripping things apart that we have spent time building and investing in over the years.
Well, we've had politicians doing that at the state level for some time as well. We're talking to Jill Underley, Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction, and you focused on that, about pulling resources away from our public schools in order to fund the, you know, the private voucher scheme that's going on and is taking up, you know, it's getting mighty close to a $1 billion price tag that I still think plenty of taxpayers around Wisconsin don't know about. What they know is that there are these referendums. All the time, these referendums, and you have some politicians that are painting the school districts as being greedy and having to raise taxes. And it feels like you're the one connecting the dots, saying there's a reason for these referendums, and it's not any kind of selfishness on the part of your local school board.
Yeah, I think people are starting to put it together. Because the money is, you know, the money that the legislature puts in every year, you know, it is pie. I mean, if you want to think about it that way, it's just that the piece of the pie that goes to privatization just keeps getting larger. So therefore, even though the money might appear that, you know, the legislature is putting more money in every year, it's just that the portion that goes to our public school districts is getting smaller. And I do feel people are putting it together. I'm seeing a lot of signs of hope, you know, like, for example, like in the Green Bay area, they were able to put it on their tax bills, you know, how much money was going to private schools from their tax, from their property tax. So, I mean, I know people want this information on there. And my hope is that, you know, in the next few years, if the legislature is able to, get more gains with more public school advocates in the legislature, that this will be on everybody's tax bill. It's just, transparency is so important in government. And I do see some signs of hope there.
As we talk about moving from the, you know, the 30,000 foot level of federal funds and state funds into the classroom itself, current practices, technology, teaching methods, everything else. When you look at that part of the state of education in Wisconsin, are there things there that need particular investment, that need more of a focus than they've been getting these days, that where Wisconsin kids might risk falling behind if we're not funding, you know, something to its proper level, or not keeping our teachers trained or anything like that? Where are those opportunities?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. As you're probably aware, but maybe your listeners are not, we did undergo a strategic planning process over the past couple of years, and we listened to people throughout Wisconsin about what they want in their public schools. And so we came up with four different pillars, and the one that I'll talk about right now, I mean, is the innovative education. We really need to start preparing kids for their future and not our past. I mean, when you think about how school is done in many ways, it's still done the same way as it was 50 to 100 years ago. And so we really need to start looking at innovation. We need to look at how we're able to meet students where they are and where they're going to go. I mean, technology is moving so fast right now, and we need to expand, you know, personalized learning and competency-based learning in our schools. We need to use career pathways to our advantage. We need to improve access to learning opportunities and library resources. And our goal is to prepare kids for their future. We're also looking at educator recruitment and retention. We know that the number one indicator of a child's success in school when they're in the school is the quality of their teacher. And when we have, you know, this turnover with our teachers, when we are struggling to fill high need areas like math and science and global languages and special education, that's hurting kids. And that's hurting our future, you know, not just our economy, but I mean, just these humans, you know, their future. So we have to really look at and agree that strong schools need strong educators. And we know that we need to expand access to grow your own programs. We need to improve teacher compensation, mentorship, professional development. But going back to the federal aspect, this is an area that they are really leaning in on cutting funding for, is our educator workforce.
It also sounds like people in the legislature, certain folks have wanted to stress standardized tests and the method of scoring and tracking that. There's been some back and forth in the legislature about that. How would you describe the current standardization test and grading process? Are there still changes that need to be made compared to where we are right now?
Yeah, I think that was the interesting criticism, I think, about my state of education. Is just that the speech was about, you know, belonging and community pride and the things that we need to do to make our schools stronger. And the opposition or the people who criticize it really are like, well, you know, she's just lowering standards. The thing is, it's like the test is just a one point in time. And it's always undergoing review. When you look at our standards are updated every 7 years, and it's not the same ones every year. So it's like, you know, math is done 1 year, literacy is another year, science is another year. And so it's like the test is constantly undergoing changes. And so you do have to update the metrics. And so it's, you know, that's one piece of it. But then the other piece of it is our school report card, our school and district report cards, which were put into place 15 years ago, and they're in state statute as far as what, you know, is measured. And so we did look at that for the first time in 15 years, and just to make sure that things are on track. It's kind of like when your computer undergoes an update, it always seems like, oh, it's at the worst time, or your phone has to download an update. But that's what we did with the state and district report cards. It's like it was due to get an update and just make sure everything was aligned. But again, it's just one piece of information. We've got lots of other indicators, of the health, I suppose, of our public schools.
And finally, you were recently elected to a second four-year term. There's going to be a change in the governor's office one way or another, a brand new governor. We won't know the makeup of the legislature, but with you being freshly elected, you're certainly positioned to be the most, I guess, fearless advocate is the right way. You've got the job security, essentially. How do you see your role over the next 4 years, the public-facing part of your role?
Look, I have never shied away from saying what I need to say or what needs to be said when it comes to public schools. I mean, that's always been my, you know, I guess just one of my characteristics, right? And so what I'm going to continue to do is just continue to advocate for public schools. I'm going to continue to advocate for the things that I know work. You know, when we look at child development and we look at success academically, I mean, I talked about, you know, teachers and them being the number one indicator for academic success. But there's a lot more that goes into it, you know, school nutrition, making sure kids have access to mental health, but also health, medical health as well, and dental health too. And we also need to just continue to modernize our public education system. So I'm going to continue to speak out in favor of all of those.
Dr. Jill Underley, we've run out of time, but it was so nice to hear all about the state of education. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Pat.
All right. Much more in the 8 o'clock hour ahead of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You have got a little over 6 minutes to get on that Civic Media app and text us the keyword morning and make that the only word in the text or the first word in the text, M-O-R-N-I-N-G, morning, before 8 o'clock. That is today's first round of 7 rounds that we do every day this week and next as part of the Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest, where there will be one daily prize of cash and jewelry in this multi-station, multi-state game. And then every entry gets you in the running for the grand prize, tickets to see Green Bay versus Minnesota in Green Bay, play a little football, great indoor seats for the game as well. So morning over the next few minutes. Civic Media Sports Director Jimmy Cuska joins us now from beautiful Boscobel, where we are, he's doing a little football coaching.
Jimmy, you work for us, Jimmy.
I'm probably picking the word morning because the Packers lost.
No.
Different morning.
Jimmy is in mourning that he can't enter in this contest working for Civic Media. So,
Man.
I know.
Okay. All right.
Yep. I know.
Thanks, guys. That's my whole morning shot. I'm out. See you.
That's okay. That's okay. You got football to coach, you know. So, how's that? How's practice this week?
Well, you know, we have 4 games to go. That's the upside. We have games to get better in, but you know, high school football is such a wonderful thing a lot of times, but it is a lot of hard work as well. I had a mini social media rant just on, not even really a rant, just kind of a state of things of, you know, I kind of look around, we're 4 weeks to go, been kind of at this for, I don't know, the past year, I guess, trying to get ready for the season. And I'm looking around, I'm like, you know, we haven't won a game yet, but a lot of hours have gone into it. But, you know, what's amazing is that, you know, I'm coaching at a program that hasn't, you know, won in years, right? Which, you know, wins and losses aren't everything, really. But we still lead the state in a couple of categories, which is pretty awesome. We blocked 3 kicks last week. Crazy really? As it sounds, we lead the state in blocking kicks, so we're good at something. a lot of that with youth sports, whether it's, you know, like really little kids or high school sports, a lot of it is just teaching people, you know, how to take accountability, how to work hard as a team, how to work to get better. And I think anybody can appreciate that as far as sports. It's what makes covering community sports here at Civic Media so great, is that with that emphasis on community, that it does bring people together, and we are all working towards doing things that are beyond wins and losses. So that's one of the big reasons why I'm in it.
Well, let me come back to the block kicks for a minute, because, you know, you think you've heard it all, and now I don't remember which NFL game it was, but it had this controversial ending based on a penalty flag that was tossed at the end over a blocked kick, but the penalty was called leverage. And I'd never heard of that before. Did you see that?
Leverage. That is interesting.
It is. It's where now you can jump up and block a kick, but basically you can't use you can't use the other player on the other team as a pommel horse, essentially.
Can't
and
push
off of them. And what you saw in the replay was one player like jumping up before the center could, you know, just right after he snapped the ball, but before he could stand up and getting there fast enough to essentially use the opposing team's shoulders as a launch pad. And that's called leverage. And that's cheating, apparently.
Same thing in high school football. So, by the way, you can't jump over another player in high school football. So it's, you know, that's pretty common in football, but yeah, that would seem to be a little unfair.
It would seem, but I'd never seen it before, much less. And again, when you see the replay of the first time, you go, oh, I don't see what's the problem. What's the problem? And then when they tell you, look for this, and you go, oh yeah, that you shouldn't do that. You know, it's not as obvious as say a face mask where there's no mistake in that one.
I think one of the cool things too about just being involved in sports, whether it's high school sports, being a fan, whatever it is that it's one of those things that does bring people together, and usually in a good way. So I always appreciate that too.
Yeah. So have we sufficiently recovered from whatever it was that caused the Packers collapse that we can just focus on the game in Dallas Sunday night?
Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of that was just caused by running into a good defense and a team with a good edge rusher. And very, very famously, the Cowboys traded away their best edge rusher to a team called the Green Bay Packers.
Yes, they did.
So that is something. But, you know, I think there should be, the Packers and Cowboys, regardless of where the teams are at, that always ends up being an interesting matchup just because of the history, especially the recent history. The trade this year obviously adds fuel to it. I still look at the NFL. You kind of take it week at a time. A lot can happen. There's not a whole lot of difference between the teams top to bottom. So no matter what, whenever you're watching a game, there's a lot of reasons to be stressed. But here's the thing. Packers have not trailed at all this year, even though they lost a game. They have not trailed for a single second of a football game this year. So that's a silver lining three games in
if only you couldn't trail when the clock says zero. But apparently that is something that can happen. By the way, the coverage of the Packers-Cowboys game Sunday night, coverage begins at 5:00 next Sunday on several civic media stations. The Brewers lose in San Diego 7-0. Forgive me if I don't get worked up about this because this is the garbage time version of the baseball schedule, whether you're in the playoffs or not, unless you're playing for something. And there are definitely some things, some fights still going on between some teams. I'm thinking specifically about Detroit, the Detroit Tigers collapsing like crazy here in the last few days. But for the Brewers, it really is more of a, you know, let's get through this afternoon's game against San Diego. Coverage begins at 2:35 this afternoon. And then Quinn Priester on the mound today, by the way. And then this weekend, three games at home against Cincinnati. And then bring on the playoffs. So last night's score, I'm okay with that.
And as long as the Phillies keep losing, it's not a big deal. The Brewers are 2.5 up on the Phillies for the top record and the NL and the number one seed. That's the only thing at stake right now. And with four games to go,
I think that's a magic number of two. Yep, pretty much does it there for us. Sounds good. Jimmy Koska, Civic Media Sports Director, thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, Earl Ingram is right around the corner here to talk about his What's Going On podcast. Melissa Baldoff has our climate check, and we'll talk to a guest about healthcare tax credits as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.